Blog Talk Radio.
Sorry, that was the wrong song. Okay, wait a second. Wait, pause about 2 seconds and then start talking.
Okay. I played Ligeia in the Roger Corman film The Tomb of Ligeia. Here is the gothic love story which inspired the movie. Edgar Allan Poe's most famous love poem. The poem Romance was originally part of a much longer poem, which spoke also of wine and drunkenness of soul. Here is how Poe finally distilled it. The next poem is an acrostic poem. The first letter of each line spills out the given names of his cousin, Elizabeth Rebecca. The next poem is an acrostic poem. The first letter of each line spells out the given names of his cousin, Elizabeth Rebecca. The poem Romance was originally part of a much longer poem, which spoke also of wine and drunkenness of soul. This is how Poe finally distilled it. Edgar Allan Poe's most famous love poem. I played Ligeia in the Roger Corman. I played Ligeia in the Roger Corman film The Tomb of Ligeia. Here is the gothic love story which inspired the movie. I played Ligeia in the Roger Corman film The Tomb of Ligeia. Here is the gothic love story which inspired the movie. I played Ligeia in the Roger Corman film The Tomb of Ligeia. Here is the gothic love story which inspired the movie. The poem Romance was originally part of a much longer poem, which spoke also of wine and drunkenness of soul. This is how Poe finally distilled it. The poem Romance was originally part of a much longer poem, which spoke also of wine and drunkenness of soul. This is how Poe finally distilled it. The poem Romance was originally part of a much longer poem, which spoke also of wine and drunkenness of soul. This is how Poe finally distilled it. The next poem is an acrostic poem. The first letter of each line spells out the given names of his cousin, Elizabeth Rebecca.
Is that a wrap?
Well, I've given you lots of different versions. What do you think? How does it sound?
I can split them, and I would like to do a little quick interview on your part in the movie and about the movie, if you'd like.
Okay, I don't think that. I mean, for our purposes, absolutely, but not to go on the book itself.
No, not to go on the book, but just for us.
Okay, absolutely.
Okay. All right, let me pause. Hello and welcome to Mystic Records Radio. I have a very special guest today, Elizabeth Shepherd, and I would like to interview her concerning her movie that she played in. And Elizabeth, why don't you tell our guests out there about the movie and your work?
I'm delighted to be here, Candice. The Tomb of Ligeia, we made it in 1964, and I am amazed to find that it is still so much a part of my life. When I started doing the conventions, the horror film conventions, I discovered how much the fans love this genre. And indeed, although it was called a horror film convention, you know, Roger Corman and Vincent Price, who made the whole series of Edgar Allan Poe movies, never thought of them as horror films. To them, they were gothic tales, tales of mystery and imagination, where the situation is huge, and the language is beautifully heightened. So I had the great pleasure of playing a dual role. Ligeia, who is the dead wife of Verdon Fell, played by the wonderful Vincent Price, and the Lady Rowena, who is the second wife. It was shot in England. It is a beautiful film to look at. It was the last of the Edgar Allan Poe series. And Vincent Price and Roger Corman evidently had always wanted to film in a real ruin. And so there we were in Castle Acre in Norfolk, England. And it was a great pleasure to make this film. And it stands the test of time, I'm happy to say.
That's absolutely amazing. And how did you begin as an actress?
Well, I was a minister's daughter. So there's something akin with the church and the stage. My father would stand in a pulpit and open his heart in front of a congregation. And so it seemed fitting that I would be an actor on the stage opening my heart for an audience. So I really always knew that this was what I wanted to do. I'm lucky in that I felt that I had a vocation, a calling to do this.
Very nice.
So when I'm not on stage, I teach Shakespeare at the Stella Adler Studio to acting students, and there's something very akin between Edgar Allan Poe and Shakespeare. You know, the heightened language, the beautiful language. They were both brilliant at.
Yes.
It's such a pleasure to have all those beautiful words in one's mouth. And I think it's important that people hear Shakespeare acted in the spirit in which it was written, when characters would express their feelings and what they were thinking and feeling at the very moment they're thinking and feeling it, which reminds us what it feels like to be that alive inside. Edgar Allan Poe, it is wonderful to read him silently, but to hear him spoken out loud is to revel in his language. I think that language needs to be heard. We're losing vocabulary in our present society. So the more language is heard, the better. It reminds us we need words. Without the words, we have no words to put ideas into words. And if we don't have the words, we then don't have the ideas. We can't express them. We don't know what to do with all the feelings inside us. We need to have words in order to express who we are and what we believe.
In my mind, when you spoke these words, I it was like a Walt Disney cartoon. I was seeing all these words floating up into the sky.
That's a beautiful image. Yes, yes.
And what was outcome of your students? Are you still teaching right now currently?
The semester ended, and so I had to learn Zoom. And the last 3 or 4 weeks of the semester, I discovered that Zoom, we can still do really, really good work. So I decided then that I would continue on Zoom. And so I advertised for actors, students, some of my students and some others, that I would offer Shakespeare sessions on Zoom for donations to get us PPE. And so I've been very busy and feeling that at least I'm doing something to help. And already we've collected between all the donations have come to well over $2,500 so far. So I feel that, I was a child in the wartime in England. And so there was an expression that we all had to do our bit with a capital B. So I feel as if I am doing my bit.
I'm very happy
to do it. You know, Shakespeare for a good cause. What can be better than that?
Yes, and people who are interested, how do they get a hold of you to enter into one of your classes?
Well, I can. You could. You could. What I'm doing is giving out my email address. That's how people have been contacting me so far.
Okay.
They could certainly. I mean, I don't know about giving out my email to the whole world, but.
Well, you said you advertise. How do you advertise?
Well, this was on Facebook, for instance.
Okay, so if someone were to go to your Facebook page, they could find Elizabeth Shepherd.
Yes. Yes. Absolutely. Or they could get in touch with you and you could pass it on to me.
Okay, so all you out there Shakespeare fans, you know who to get hold of when you
want to Yes, it'll be worth your while, I can tell you. I was lucky that at Bristol University when I was a student, my Shakespeare teacher was a man called Bertram Joseph, who wrote Acting Shakespeare and was a wonderful Elizabethan scholar, as well as a wonderful guide of elucidating the text for actors. But he also was able to really show me the spirit in which the plays were written, which makes a big difference. You need to know that Hamlet has a problem with the ghost, because it could be the true ghost of his father, or it could be the devil in pleasing shape, tempting him to murder Claudius, whom he hates anyway. This is why he doesn't immediately act. And eventually, once he has proof that Claudius did do the murder, then he can go ahead and it is rightful revenge. But if he had been mistaken, if he had been misled by the devil, Hamlet's action would have been murder and he would have damned his own soul. So that is what holds him back. But if you don't know that, or if you don't take that into account, Hamlet does express it in the play. The ghost that I have seen may be the devil. If you don't express that, then people now tend to think of Hamlet as a chronic procrastinator who just can't get on with it, which is not at all who he is.
Sure.
So I was glad that Bert was my teacher, and so I passed Bert on to others.
And while studying in school, I'm sure you had many performances.
Oh, yes. Bertram Joseph directed me as Juliet. And indeed, in the book Acting Shakespeare, there are pictures of the very young Elizabeth Shepherd as Juliet.
How nice.
Yes, yes. In fact, you know, I'm still a working actor, and I would have been on stage right now, but like all other actors, you know, we're waiting to see whether eventually productions that were scheduled will go on next year. So I hope the theatre, well, the theatre will survive this, but how long it takes is another matter. But, of course, Shakespeare's theatre would be stopped by the plague. When the plague came, the theatres were closed.
Yes, yes.
So, you know, this isn't new.
Right. The Middle Ages, Elizabethan period, all of the times, 1500s and so on, they suffered many plagues.
Yes, yes, yes.
All the world's a stage.
Yes. Yes, indeed. But it's good to be doing something positive in these. And, of course, I mean, the latest developments in our country require us all to open our hearts, that's for sure.
Yes, it does. Yes. What do you think is your, in your opinion, your most favorite role that you can think back on?
Oh, well, many Shakespeare roles. Indeed, I mean, Lady Macbeth, who is, again, like Hamlet, has got a bad name in modern times because everybody thinks of her as a monster, who she made him do it. But no, she is a loving wife. Her husband has told her that he wants to be king above all else, and so she is determined she will help him. She is a human being. And if she was a monster, she wouldn't have to have begged all the spirits to help her become, to cross over to the dark side. It's a tragedy because neither of them start on the dark side. But because of his ambition, between them they cross over. And once they're on the dark side, then it's downhill from there on.
Sure.
So she is a very challenging role, but I was glad to explore how Shakespeare actually presents her as a human being, and who does, indeed, in the end, go mad. A monster wouldn't have gone mad.
Sure.
But another very different kind of a role, the role of Hermione in The Winter's Tale, is I love that play because it is about the wish fulfillment, I think, that is the longing in everyone's heart in life. Terrible damage is done when Leontes, Hermione's husband, out of his jealousy and insecurity, accuses her of having a bastard child with his best friend who has been staying there for 9 months, and causes tragedy for all the family. The son dies. He orders the little baby who is born to be murdered. And puts his wife on trial.
Wow.
At the end of which, once the news of the boy's death, as well as her own baby, it appears that she herself has died.
Sure.
And then Leontes begins his repentance, and it takes 16 years before there is some kind of reconciliation at the end. And Shakespeare was very wise, because when such damage is done, it takes that long for the man, in this case, to repent enough, and for her to be even able to think of forgiving him. It's very wise of Shakespeare to know that. And in the end, the fact that they are reconciled in the end, I think this is a great longing in human life. One the longer one lives, the deepest wish is that everything could come out all right in the end.
Yes.
I think that wish fulfillment is universal. And many of Shakespeare's later plays do express this.
Uh-huh.
So The Winter's Tale is dear to my heart, and I have played Hermione and was awarded an Emmy nomination by the New York chapter, because we did the play on Channel 13 when I first came here in the 1960s.
Uh-huh.
But another play that is dear to me, and Blanche DuBois in Streetcar Named Desire, that is a part that requires all of you. And you have to experience it. You have to go there. And it is quite painful. But it is the emotional poetry of Tennessee Williams is on a par with Shakespeare. Yes.
Yes, yes.
And
well,
then there
go ahead.
There was another play that is dear to my heart also, because I felt tremendous responsibility. It was a play called My Mother's Courage, written by George Tabori, Hungarian writer, a true story based on his mother's experience in 1943, where she was in Budapest. In 1943, the Jewish community had not, up to now, been targeted, but it was beginning. In fact, George Tabori's father had already been taken into custody.
Oh, wow.
And Elsa, his mother, was just en route to go and play cards with her sister when she was picked up by the police, put in a cattle car, and sent off.
Oh,
and
dear.
At the Polish border, everybody was decamped in order to wait for another train to take them to Auschwitz. And so they were all put in this abandoned bakery. And Elsa was, there was a friend of the family there who said to her, Elsa, you shouldn't be here. Why are you here? You must tell them there's been a mistake. Mm-hmm. And the play, which is called My Mother's Courage, and the play is narrated by the George Tabori character, the son. And there's this wonderful scene where Elsa walks slowly across the stage, away from her people, which was very hard for a Jewish woman to do, away from her people and towards the enemy, knowing that any minute, I mean, there was a man standing there with a gun, and she makes an excuse to the young officer, young German officer, and says that she had a pass, but she didn't have it in her purse. And he shows mercy to her and believes her, chooses to believe her. And they travel together in the train back to Budapest. And he talks to her about his life. And there's a scene towards the end of the play where George Tabori says, 10 years later, my mother, sitting under the apple tree, talked about what it felt like now. And she says to him, darling, never look into the eyes of the enemy. Otherwise, you might stop hating him and so betray the dead.
Wow.
And that message, I felt such a responsibility, because I am not of the Jewish race and I'm not Hungarian, but I felt the responsibility of speaking for them on such an important, something so important and dear to their hearts and to mine too. But that I felt it was an amazing opportunity to enter into another life like that.
Yeah, it's amazing the things that man's inhumanity to man has created over the centuries.
Yes. Yes. It really is.
And, you know, even the Greek tragedies portray so many situations in life that were so bad at the time. But I don't think history has ever had anything as bad as the atrocities of Auschwitz and the death camps.
No, that was, I mean, so the cruelty, the systematic cruelty like that. I mean, we are experiencing systematic cruelty here. But
true. Not on that scale.
On such a huge scale.
Yes.
And
awful. To just take people right off the street like that and throw them into a train car and
yes.
do away with them. It's just,
yes. Yes.
It's hard to even comprehend. You know,
yes.
what the people went through. And if it weren't for brave photographers who went and took pictures of these things, there's people who deny it ever even happened.
Yes, yes, yes.
Which is a tragedy all in its own.
Sure is.
But back to Shakespeare. And Tennessee Williams. I was a theater arts major in college myself. I did not take acting because I wanted to work on the I was a costuming major. So I wanted to,
yes.
I like to sew, and I worked on plays in college at Los Angeles Valley College, LAVC, and one of the my favorite ones that we did El Camino Real, and we did Strangest Kind of Romance, and it came out so cute because we were doing one act plays, and one of my friends in class was studying to be an actor, and we were very good friends. And I had this cat that we used in the play, because when he would come over to my house and visit, he would always pet my kitty. And she was a pretty little tortoiseshell calico kitty, white with the tortoiseshell colors.
Oh,
and
yes, my son would love that.
She was amazing. I never taught her to do anything. But he was a film student as well. He wanted to be a director and actor, and he did go on to pursue those things and do quite well. But he filmed the play as we had a 300 seat main stage play theater at our college, and it's so cute because everything went perfectly. And you never know when working with an animal what's going to happen. So,
right.
You know, the curtain opens and there's his room for The Strangest Kind of Romance. And my cat, Leah, she jumps up on the windowsill because she sees Scott backstage there waiting to come on. And she puts her paws up on the windowsill and she's looking. She's looking for him. And then when he walks on stage, she jumps down and runs up to him. And he has a carton of milk, and he pours it in the bowl, and she starts licking it, and then a little spilled on the rug on the stage, and she licks that up too. And it was so precious. People were in the audience were going, oh, you could hear him.
Oh, yes.
It was
a natural actor, yes.
Yes, she was. And it just came out so cute. I can't imagine. I had no idea what was going to happen. I was hoping that she would stay on the bed. She was on the bed when the curtains opened.
Right,
and then she jumped down up on a chair and then put her paws up on the stage window.
Wow.
My son had named her Leah because he was a big Star Wars fan. But...
Oh, right. Yes.
Yes, yes. But yes, Tennessee Williams' plays are very fun and
yes.
Tragic as well as Shakespeare, you know.
Yes, absolutely. One thing about the audiobook that we are doing, people associate Edgar Allan Poe with horror, with being scared.
Sure.
And they don't realize perhaps it's not so well known what a poet of the heart he was. So many of his poems and stories will be filled with love and loss and longing. And indeed, in his own life, you know, in his personal relationships, there was a lot of love and loss and longing. And he expresses it with such a full heart. And so I am really interested in my readings to present that Poe to the public so that they get to know him in another way, in a more personal way like that. So
that's
I hope that maybe we can go further.
Yes, and I'm so looking forward to getting this book out and audio book, and it's really a pleasure working with you. And
anything I can do to help put the word out, I would be very happy. So
we're putting out the word right now.
Yes. Very good.
We're letting people know that it's coming, and Edgar Allan Poe's Tales of the Ligeia, is that correct?
Yes, Ligeia, yes.
Ligeia.
Yes, it was a fairly early story, but it is certainly heartfelt. And it's interesting because people who know the film, The Tomb of Ligeia, which which I mentioned at the beginning there, the story is a little bit altered in the film. So it's interesting for people to hear the original. And so, as I say, you know, it inspired the movie, which then is another work of art.
Right, right.
And has lasted the test of time, I'm happy to say. I would have been amazed, as I said, that in 1964, if I had known, I would be still talking about it now.
Right? Well, you know, Edgar Allan Poe has so many classics, and I think that this is one that people are very fond of because of the tale of love and romance and loss.
Yes, yes, yes. And you know, the films that Roger Corman and Vincent Price made, Vincent Price was wonderful to work with. And people underestimate what a great classical actor he was. You know, they associate him with very often with films where he's kind of sending the horror genre up. He had a great sense of humor. But, you know, with his presence and his voice, he would regard these Gothic scripts like Shakespeare, as indeed I do. Because of the heightened situation and the beautiful language to express it. And so it really shows Vincent Price, you know, as the stature that he has as an actor. And Roger Corman, you know, I mean, in all his different ways, is just a towering man of the American cinema. He was a pleasure to work with. And he would discuss the roles with actors before filming, so we didn't have to waste time on the set. And also, he himself went to the actor's studio so he could understand what an actor goes through, what an actor's process is, so that he had some understanding. So he would then entrust the story to us, the acting of it to us, and he would then tell the story with his beautiful pictures. He had a wonderful eye for telling a story through the composition of how he shoots the film.
Right, and I like the artwork for the film with the black cat with the yellow golden eyes.
Yes.
It's
well,
amazing.
They had the black cat doesn't feature so much in the original stories, you would see, but there is another story of Poe's called The Black Cat. So what Corman and his writers would do, if in order to enlarge a Poe story, they would use characters from another story. So it's all Poe, but he'll put different things together. And I must say that in these times, I think the next one we should do is The Mask of the Red Death. Because in that, they are going through what we are going through right now and trying to avoid
true.
It and finding that in the end, you can't wall yourself away from reality.
This is true, very true. These are definitely different times, especially for my children and grandchildren who have in a society that has not had any plagues. It has not
yes.
really had anything on such a severe situation as
no,
the platform
no,
of today.
Absolutely. And also, it's like, I mean, I've been through a wartime, and I know America was in the war, but not in the same way. You know, they weren't facing invasion. And America
right.
has never been invaded until now. This
right.
virus
and there's
has
only
invaded
been,
the country in a way that
right.
they've never experienced before.
Well, in the one time in New York in September 9/11, you know,
yes.
was the first
yes.
time America had ever been attacked by another country.
Yes.
And
yes.
for people like you who grew up in England, I've known a few people that grew up during the wartime, and it was one of my mother's very best friends grew up there, and one of my very dear friends as well. And he's 91 now, and he was like a messenger boy in the for the military, you know, and
yes.
and worked. He started out as a messenger boy and reestablishing the communication lines on the ground, and you know he has a hard time talking about a lot of it because
yes.
friends of his were killed and you know bombs were dropping all around. I mean, I can't even imagine what it would be like to have bombs dropping all around me continuously and you know, then being brave enough to go out and repair the phone lines so that there were communications and people would be able to say, you know, are you okay? You know, how are things over there and the military and everyone? You know, it's like
well,
very
I came
strange.
with my family. My parents were missionaries in Burma, and I was in Burma as a child. And in 1940, we came back to London in the Blitz. And lived with my father's mother, Grandma Shepherd. And when the air raids came, Grandma Shepherd and Auntie Vida, her daughter, and my mother and I would be huddled under the stairs, and my father would be out there as an ARP warden, Air Raid Patrol warden.
There you go.
When there was a particularly loud bang, my mother would say to me, "Oh, that must be Daddy's buttons popping off." I remember that.
Yeah,
but,
you
yeah.
know that brings a child to understand in a less fearful way. You know that
yeah, yes,
that things
yes.
can happen. I mean, I still cannot imagine what it would have been like having bombs dropping around. But I remember that I was really scared as a little child, very severe thunder and lightning, and the sound of the thunder would just make me shiver. And my mama would say, "Oh, that's God moving his furniture around."
Oh, yes, yes,
so,
yes. So
you know,
they say things to comfort us, yes.
To comfort us, yes, and that was very nice of you know, your mother and your family to take you to a point where it's understandable, but, you know, easier for a child to associate with. But, you know, those were some extremely hard times, you know.
Yes, they were.
Very good. And so your father was a minister.
That's so wonderful. Yes, and a missionary for all his life. And then...
So that's why you were in India, correct?
We were in Burma, he was a missionary in Burma. He was, in 1945, he was in Calcutta to organize the missionaries going back into Burma after the Japanese invasion.
Wow.
And he had worked, he was a superintendent of the leprosy hospital in Mandalay. And he had just got permission for the missionaries to go back in order really to open the leprosy hospital again. And that was when he discovered that he himself had contracted leprosy.
Oh, no.
And so he was then sent, this was in 1945 when there wasn't a cure. Except for Chalmugra oil injections, which sometimes worked.
Wow.
And so he was. He then went to a sanatorium in South India, near Madras, Chingalpatt near Madras. And in 2 years, he was showing signs of recovery.
Oh,
and
wow.
So my mother joined him. I was left in England. And he was cured.
Wow.
But when he came back, the because of the stigma people embarrassed about leprosy, because there's this terrible stigma that you must have done something to deserve it, you know,
right.
Which was written into the Bible. And I think people were so frightened. They said, well, they must have done something to deserve it. But this
stigma. And it's a bacterial infection.
Mm-hmm. Yes, I mean, it's a perfectly ordinary illness, like
sure.
TB.
Right.
But so he was an enormous, he accepted the leprosy as that God must have chosen him to bear witness from inside this terrible disease that people were so frightened of. And he spoke most movingly about the stigma, how that has to go.
Uh-huh.
And so the Methodist Church did not encourage him to speak about it. So for years and years after he died, I finally got somebody in the Methodist Church to write a tribute to my father, really, in order to say that his witness, you know, can be used as an inspiration. And so this is something that I want to let people know about. Yes, because although leprosy can be cured, the stigma still, you know, all over the world, people, when you're recovered from leprosy, still nobody wants to marry them, nobody wants to give them a job, nobody wants to be
right.
Near them. It's
very contagious.
It's yes.
Extremely
yes.
Contagious, and you know, it also has a lot of symptoms of the virus that we have of today,
right.
Except
leprosy is actually very difficult to catch. It's not contagious. And most people, only a small percentage of people, are actually open to it. Most people wouldn't get it even if they were next to it. There's all these myths about leprosy, you know. So.
Right. Well, you have to have direct contact with the secretions from a person
mm-hmm.
that is infected. And
well, it's in the air.
Know.
You know, you pick it up in the air like TB.
Right. If
and
they
like
sneeze
this,
or cough.
Yes. Mm-hmm. So that's another part of my story.
Right. Well, you know, you've certainly come a long way, and your work is absolutely amazing and magnificent.
So, Candice, do you think that you have got what we need for the book, or should I just run through them once more while we're still on the air?
Well, I think we have what we need, and if we need to come back again and do more, we can do that. And I want to thank you for sharing with us part of your life and your growing up and your family.
Oh, my pleasure. My pleasure. A great pleasure to talk to you.
And, you know, the Shakespeare plays, okay, so how many, I know you did The Winter's Tale and Macbeth, right? And,
yes.
Did you play in Hamlet as well?
I played both. I played Ophelia, and then I played Gertrude a couple of times, and I've played Portia, and my very first Shakespeare role was Beatrice in Much Ado About Nothing. And I played Isabella in All's Well That Ends Well, lots. Viola in Twelfth Night.
Very good.
On and on, yes.
Mainstage theater.
Yes, and theater is my favorite medium, you know, because it is the actor's medium. Once the play is on, the whole role is entrusted to me, you know, and then I share the whole role with an audience. In film and television, I feel it's my job to produce the best raw material I can. And then it's up to the director. She will choose which parts of my performance to share.
Yes.
So it's, you know, it's different. But although it's, you know, with a good director, it's thrilling to be in a film that works. But
very
the
good.
Theater is the favorite. You know, it's live theater.
I miss the live theater. I really do. And you know, there's so much that goes on into the plays and the scenery and the stagecraft and the lighting and the music and everything, you know, that helps the performances for the actors and actresses. It's just something that was put on a side burner with me and my life. And I do know there's a local community theater group I've wanted to join for years to do the stagecraft with, you know.
Well,
I've
you
never,
should do it.
I know. It's like to get through busy. It's busy running a record label. And,
yes, I'm sure it is.
Yes, I always have a big plate full, and I also have a large ranch and livestock and things
you've
to watch out for.
You've got a very full life.
I do, and I need a maid. Oh, I never have time for much housework. I get the dishes done, but that's about it.
Oh, yes, goodness. I know the feeling.
Yes. So it's been very nice chatting with you, Elizabeth. And,
yes, I have enjoyed it too.
And if people are interested in her classes teaching Shakespeare, you can get a hold of her, Elizabeth Shepherd, on Facebook. And you can get a hold of me, Candace D'Andrea, on Facebook as well, or through Mystic Records. You can check us out on our website at mysticrecordshq.com. And there's a little link you can click to contact me, and I can put you in touch with Elizabeth for classes in Shakespeare.
And if you would like to know more about my career, you can look at my website, Elizabeth Shepherd, S-H-E-P-H-E-R-D, ElizabethShepherdActor.com.
Very good.
And if you go to the news section, that's all the latest thing that's been happening.
Very good. All right. Well, we wish you the best in all of your classes and your acting, and let's hope that New York opens up the stage rather quickly and people get back to doing what their heart most desires.
Let's hope. Yes.
All right. Well, you take care now, and we will talk to you soon.
Thank you very much, Candace.
All right. Bye.
Bye for now. Bye-bye.
Leave us with one of your little quotes.
With one of my little quotes.
Yes.
If I can... I'm just walking over to where I can see something that the very end of King Lear has something amazing to say about our times at the moment. And I'm sitting here with my Shakespeare, and at the very end of the play, Edgar, who is the good guy who has helped make everything come right, he ends the play by saying, "Wait of these sad times, we must obey. Speak what we feel, not what we ought to say. The oldest have borne most. We that are young shall never see so much, nor live so long." And I really like that line, "Speak what we feel, not what we ought to say."
Beautiful. Speak from your heart.
Yes.
Okay. We'll be heading on, and people can join us next time when we'll be back with Mystic Records Radio. Bye now.
Very good. Bye for now.